You're listening to Thunder Quack Podcast Network.
Know what I like? Dirt. Dirt's pretty cool and comfy, huh? No grass to eat without dirt.
I guess.
But I hate the sun. Not into that. Gets into your beady little eyes, makes everything all hot. Plus, it makes it a lot harder to possess people. No thanks, am I right?
Launchpad, do you think I'm a mole monster?
What? No. Can't believe my best friend is a mole monster.
I'm your best friend?
Oh no, it can hear my thoughts. Keep it together, Launchpad. Gotta change the subject somehow.
Hey, you know what we should talk about? Another subject.
Sure.
He doesn't suspect a thing.
Terror of the Terrafermians. I am one of your hosts, Curtis Findlay.
I'm your other host, Michael Cohen.
And we have an episode that riffs on a classic DuckTales episode. But before we get to that, I just want to say a couple of things news-related. The first one is that in this episode, Magica Dispel actually has a line or two.
Yeah.
And she is voiced by Catherine Tate. And I don't think that this was previously announced, or if this was an announcement, I missed it. I had no idea that Catherine Tate was going to be in this show.
Okay. Who's so, Catherine Tate for people who don't know? I'm not saying that I don't know. I'm saying you don't know. Don't accuse me of anything.
For those who are fans of Doctor Who, I'm sure you'll recognize the name Catherine Tate. I'm not a Doctor Who fan at all, so I have never watched an episode with Catherine Tate, but if you've watched The Office, you probably know her from one of the later seasons as Nellie. That's how I actually know Catherine Tate. Catherine Tate is also Donna Noble in Doctor Who. So she's one of the Doctor's companions.
So that's interesting then, because there's a David Tennant Catherine Tate connection there.
Yes, there is.
Yeah, because they were on. She was on at a certain point when David Tennant was the 10th Doctor. So,
right,
that's cool. It's kind of a reunion of sorts.
Yeah, and they'll be playing Mortal Enemies in this show, so that's kind of cool. And Catherine Tate's really funny. She's very funny in The Office. I think she's really great. But Magica is not typically a funny character, so we'll see which direction they go with her.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I like it. I like it when casting can sort of play off a preconceived relationship or notion.
Totally.
For two actors and play that into the characters for people who are aware. So that's cool. What's our other piece of news?
Well, the other piece of news is that we've been talking about how the order of these shows has been kind of messed up.
Yep.
So in the last episode, I kind of gave the order of how they're going to be airing it, but they've switched things up since then.
Oh.
They are just switching the order of the Mark Beeks episode and the Gladstone Gander episode. So that, and I don't know, people are speculating that maybe it's because it's in line with all of the complaints that people have been getting about the order of the episodes. So it's going to be episode, I can't remember what they are, 6, 7, and 8 instead of 7, 6, and 8.
Okay.
So a little bit more in order.
Interesting. Disney XD better listen up, because DuckTales is actually its highest rated premiere.
No kidding.
It I think of all time, right? So
it said within the news release, it said within the, it's the highest rated show in the past 2 years.
Okay.
So I don't know what show 2 years ago was doing better, but yeah, it's currently beat it. So yeah.
Yeah. It, so they better listen up because I think that they've, I don't know. I think that maybe we got a bit of a hit on our hands.
I think so. Yeah. Even if Uncle Scrooge is never in the show.
Yeah, Darkwing hopefully is not too far behind then. They'll push that stuff into production. Actually, speaking of Darkwing, there's another little piece of news that that Funko, we talked about Funko a couple weeks ago, doing those little Mystery Minis figures. Yep. They also announced today that they're going to be doing like full size action figures for Disney Afternoon characters. And, this like first
fully
initial,
articulated and everything.
Yeah. This first initial lineup is going to be, Darkwing, Scrooge, Chip, Dale, and Baloo. And Dale actually also comes with Zip. So, with Zipper. So, yeah,
and like they look great.
Yeah, they look fantastic, and I think that all you can see right now, they're actually just computer models.
Yeah,
of what the figures are going to look like. So we'll have to wait and see what the actual production quality is like. But yeah, they are fully articulated. Let me count here. Darkwing looks like he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 points of articulation. Maybe even 9 if the wrists rotate. So yeah, like that's actually pretty good by today's standards. There's not most figures these days are actually 5 points because producing action figures costs quite a bit. But this is cool because Darkwing had a line of action figures, but the rest of these characters never really had action figures and never really even had all that much in the way of toys. I mean, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers and Tailspin, I don't think ever really had toys.
Well, Tailspin had a line of action figures. I have a few.
Oh, did it? Oh, okay. Yep. Okay.
But they are not, they don't look as good as this Baloo does. Baloo,
yeah, these figures look really fantastic.
I kind of hope they take out the teeth in Baloo because that's a Jungle Book thing, not a Tailspin thing. He doesn't have the two teeth there. So I'm hoping that they are still a work in progress. Also, Scrooge, just a minor detail, but Scrooge's collar is red, not blue.
Yeah.
So, but that's just if these are just concept, then there you go.
Totally. But it's going to be tough for me not to collect all of these. I know for sure I'm going to get that Darkwing, of course. But I like the Chip and Dale quite a bit as well too.
So. Yeah. Well, if they go with these, I'm going to forget about the minis and may just even sell my Darkwing Funkos and just go with these because these are far better in my opinion.
Yeah.
They appeal to me way more.
Yeah, for sure.
The package art looks terrible though.
The package art does look pretty bad. So Funko, if you're listening, I can fix that for you. I can fix that up real quick. I can even do packaging that is 90s era reminiscent that ties together all 5 figures, even though they've got different package styles and that sort of thing. But with a similar aesthetic, and then people will look at it and they'll know that they're actually all one line, but that's okay. It's up to you guys, Funko. If you guys think that you're happy with this, I don't think they care. I think that they're gonna sell a million figures anyways, but Funko's getting pretty good at this stuff and they're actually starting to give some of the other major manufacturers run for their money. I know they're definitely making money hand over fist on the pop vinyl stuff. They've created a real they kind of created their own niche sub market not actually vinyl toys, because vinyl toys are actually very expensive. Vinyl toys tend to be designer. And then Kid Robot kind of broke into the mass market with the vinyl toys. And then Funko came along and did an even more mass market version of what they were doing. But any collectible store you go into these days will have just a wall of pop vinyls.
Yeah.
Because there are people who just like collect them like crazy. It's insane. Some of the collections that I've seen. Darkwing is the only pop vinyl that I have, and that's just because there's not much Darkwing stuff. But yeah. Like you, I'm excited because now there will be a Darkwing action figure, so it's kind of like, what's the point in having the pop vinyl?
Yeah, exactly. The pop-up vinyl that is so stylized that it doesn't even look like... I mean, it looks like Darkwing, but mm-hmm. this one actually looks like Darkwing.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's going to be a good sculpt, so... Let's hope for a wave two, because I want to see, I don't know, a Gizmo Duck action figure.
Oh, man. Don't you tempt me. Gizmo Duck presents an interesting challenge for an action figure because he's got a balance on that one.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
It's possible. It can be done. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like that, you just have to make that wheel out of something denser than the rest of the plastic and weight
it. Or it, a pig. It sits on a peg yeah, base. Yeah,
you could do that. That's the simple thing. But I think it'd be more impressive if you could basically make him like a weeble so that he wobbles but he doesn't fall down. But
that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Let's jump into Terror of the Terrafermians. Let's see, here's our description. Huey and Webby's disagreement over the existence of a mythic species leads the kids to explore an eerie abandoned subway tunnel, while Mrs. Beakley grows suspicious of Lena. Air date, October 7, 2017. Writer, Christian Megahalis. And the two directors are Matthew Humphreys and Tom Owens.
I like the it's funny when we were going through the DuckTales classic stuff, and I think especially because it was a five-parter, it was the same names over and over and over and over and over. Yeah. I like that with this series, the crew of writers is actually fairly deep.
Yeah, it's pretty big,
as well as the directors. So it's been cool to see fresh names. Basically every week, I think.
We've seen Dana Terrace a couple of times.
Yeah.
It has changed up, and I like to see which episodes, which people get which episodes, and so I wonder if Matthew Humphreys and Tom Owens will get more of the kind of the horror related episodes, because they did a good job with this one.
They did do a really good job. This is actually a really, really fun episode. And like you said, it's a great callback to some classic DuckTales with the Terrafermians. And I like how for both new and old fans there's value in that, because for the new fans there's a great build up to the reveal of the Terrafermians, and you don't know if they're gonna be good or bad throughout this. And for the old fans, for the fans of the classic stuff as well as the comics, you're kind of going through it going like, are they going to change it? Are they going to...
That was me.
Right? Yep. And you're waiting for that reveal at the end.
Are we actually going to make them monsters? I don't know about this. And then, oh, okay.
I really enjoyed this one. I enjoyed the interplay between all the characters. It's really interesting that Scrooge is absent from so much of the series, and I think we expected that with David Tennant voicing Scrooge, that he won't be in that many episodes. But the interesting part about that is that I don't know that I necessarily miss him all that much. Not to say that it wouldn't be great if he was in more of these episodes, but just to say that the rest of the cast is so strong that I don't find myself through the episode going like, yeah, but where's Scrooge? Right? Because I love these
characters. Well, I was saying that.
Were you? Okay.
I was. And I know that maybe if these were in the right order, the episodes that Scrooge wasn't in would be spaced a little bit better. Sure. But now they're all clumped together.
Yeah. As we talked about on the last episode, the creators of the show wanted it to be a little bit more like... a high adventure, and then sort of a more like at home type adventure. Like
we've got a lot of duck and forth, and we've got a lot of the Duckburg episodes now.
I'm
waiting for the High Adventure episodes.
Yeah, for sure. But for this episode, let's start with our top three moments. I'm going to start with right at the beginning of the episode with Launchpad and his interaction with the Mole Monsters poster and just sort of his whole general demeanor coming out of the film. He's very impressionable, let's say. He's kind of paranoid and looking over his shoulder and doesn't
the best line
sorry go ahead
the best line was the theater manager, and what about the bathrooms?
Yeah,
they come out of the toilets.
So good. I loved the, like, right from the beginning of this episode, it was like, okay, this is gonna be a good launch pad one.
It sure was.
Yeah.
I really liked Webby's diary. We get to see this again. I think we saw it a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
But she pulls it out to talk about the Terraformians, and it's like complete with pop-ups. She's got little moving parts that illustrate the thing, and then, you know, littered with little drawings of her as a superhero.
Yeah.
And, you know, oh, that's a candy that I wish that they made. It was good.
I love how they've juxtaposed it with the junior Woodchucks manual.
Totally. Yep. They did a good job of that.
You have one that has the actual facts, and then you have another one that has all of the mysteries, and they're sort of bringing them together, right?
Yeah. The playoff between Webby and Huey in this episode was really great, especially since we haven't had that Huey episode yet that was supposed to air a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
So this is kind of like my first real introduction to Huey and finding out how he interacts with things and how he thinks and stuff.
Yeah. So, other than that little bit,
Sea shanties.
Yeah. With the sea shanties and whatnot. Yeah. This is sort of the most in depth we've gotten with that character. And he is actually quite different from the other two. Right. Because Dewey is definitely the adventurous one, right? And he's sort of act first, think later. And then Louie is lazy. So
And a schemer.
Yeah. So like that's very different from how they've put Huey together, where
Huey is by the books.
Very literally by the book, right?
Yeah.
And he's very methodical, and he's actually got a lot of anxiety, which I think that a lot of people can probably relate to. I just love how they've fleshed out the three brothers into their own characters.
And we didn't mention in the last episode in the Beagle Birthday Massacre that when Lena first is introduced to the boys, she says something like, "Oh, I get it. You're all three exactly the same," or something like that. Yeah. And then they start talking together at the same time, totally playing on the fact that they're completely different in this show.
Yeah.
Compared to the old DuckTales.
I think poking fun at the older DuckTales where they would say things in unison and that sort of thing. And it was, I love how they're like, wait, what? No. How is this happening? Like
they're directly referencing that.
Yeah. This has never happened before. I love that. But my second favorite moment in this episode is when Beakley is kind of she's ranting a little bit about Lena and the dangerous situation or whatever, and then also she's also got to not only does she have to deal with these kids, she's also got to deal with Launchpad, and she refers to him as a man child, and Launchpad like looks over his shoulder, he's like, man child, where? And I just like Launchpad's just so stupid in this, and I love it because it's not just that he's a pilot, although he is a pilot, in case you didn't know that. He's also got these other great character aspects, and I just Beck Bennett is just so perfect in that role, with just sort of that lovable buffoon.
I feel like they've really played on a lot of kind of tick aspects of in the humor and in the in the thought process of for Launchpad.
Absolutely.
There were times in this episode, I think especially when he was fixing the train with Dewey in the car, keeping an eye on Dewey, a lot of the things he said I could just hear, and also with Beck Bennett's inflection, I could hear the tick.
Yeah.
Like it just made me think of Townsend Coleman voicing the tick there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, there's a very similar character archetype going on there of the sort of the dimwit with a heart of gold, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the literalisms where whenever somebody says something, like he just like sarcasm doesn't register and metaphors don't make any sense. It's very very the tick. It's a lot like Drax. the same sort of comedic beats of man-child. Like, that's the sort of thing that I think Drax would say. He's like, a man-child? What kind of a gross creature is that? Right? Yeah, I love it. I love Launchpad.
Yep, he's great. So I have a Launchpad moment here, too, and I think it's the same as one of your moments here. At the end, when I love Launchpad's logic, how he comes to the conclusion that he is not just a mole monster, but he's good, which means mole monsters are good.
Yeah.
So he's a good mole monster. it's just a quite funny and a little bit brilliant kind of writing there.
There's some great circular logic. I definitely have that one. The wait, am I a mole monster? Is it Dewey? Yeah, I think it's Dewey that tricks him. That they're kind of going back and forth because the entire episode, he's just so I have this written down. It's like every single second of Launchpad in this episode is my favorite. So I can't, it's so hard to pull out any one moment, but just all the moments where he's eyeing Dewey and he's like, wait a second, that's exactly what a mole monster would want me to think.
He definitely stole the show in this episode.
For sure. And in what's great about that is in an otherwise really great and compelling episode with some great character development, you've also got Launchpad just stealing every scene that he's in. It's so good.
Yeah. Okay, my final moment, the thing I liked about this one is just the overall animation in this episode was quite a bit of, I think, a step up from the last few that we've seen. Now, there are two animation studios that have been handling the animation for this show. There's Toon City and Snipple.
Okay.
And Snipple Animation did the pilot, and Toon City did The Great Dime Chase and what was the other one? Day Trip of Doom. And then Snipple Animation did the Beagle Birthday Massacre. And I was watching that episode and I really didn't like a lot of it. It was flat. I found that the characters didn't move unless they absolutely had to. And a lot of the mouth movements were just off. The lip sync was terrible. But this episode, which was also done by Snipple Animation, was way better. There was just tons of great movement and great motion and people and things going on in the background, and the mouths were way more natural. There was so much like overlapping action with the hair and everything, and that just wasn't there in the last one. So I'm not sure exactly what happened with this episode and the last one, but I found quite a noticeable difference and quite an improvement.
The thing that's really interesting about animation nowadays, the fact that everything's digital, it really changes the process. I see this a lot on Star Wars Rebels, a lot of all the Lucasfilm animation stuff. And it's a little bit less so in something like this because this is a little bit more of a hand-drawn style. But at the end of the day, you're building up assets in a library. And as you build up assets in that library, you're able to reuse things from the past, reuse moments, or reuse scenery or whatnot, and then build on top of that. So you don't have to start from scratch. So being that this episode is further into the production schedule than the other ones that we've been talking about, I think that probably has a lot to do with it. Because in fact,
okay,
I think so far this is actually the furthest into the production schedule.
It is
of the episodes that we know, it. Right? So,
yep.
So I think that you a the animators start to learn the characters, and the studios specifically get better and better at that. Is Snipple? Where is Snipple? Is that in North America?
It's in the Philippines.
It's in the Philippines. Yeah. So
yeah.
I think a lot of the time with the international studios, it takes a little while for them to get the feeling on that. And again, this is stuff that I know specifically from Lucasfilm. They do a specific segment of it. Of the animation, like the keyframing and sort of the animatics in San Francisco, and then they send everything else over to their studio in Korea for Lucasfilm Animation, and so there's a catch up period where that studio has to learn terminology and technique and that sort of thing. But once they get there, all of a sudden you start to see it increase and get better and better. Joel Aaron talks about that a lot at Star Wars Celebration when he's talking about working with the foreign studios and their ability to then, you know, like in later seasons, amp things up and move things forward in bigger and better ways and try new stuff. Because once you have that core language of how to get the animation to where you need it to be, you can start to experiment a little bit more. Right. So, I think that's probably what we're seeing to a certain degree. And then I think also just the storyboarding and direction can influence that a lot as well. If you have a really, really good director, or in this instance, team of directors, that might actually, they might be better at translating the visual aspect through storyboards and through notes and that sort of thing. So I have to keep an eye on that. Is it Snipple? Is it the directors? Is it some other aspect that's lending itself to that? But yeah, there are actually some really great character moments in the animation in this episode. And there's mm-hmm. so many, like, because all three Trimplets are there, Webby is there, Lena is there, Launchpad and Mrs. Beakley. There's a lot of characters to keep track of, and I feel like everybody gets a moment in this episode.
And they each really have cool. a unique style, and like the way they walk and the way they move is all unique. It's they all have very distinct personalities.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Do you want to jump into the behind the scenes for this episode?
Yeah, I think the most obvious thing to talk about here is the callback to older DuckTales and Uncle mm-hmm. Scrooge media. Of course, fans of the old DuckTales know the classic episode Earthquack. And I think that when the show goes on a break in December, we should probably cover this episode, Earthquack, just so that we can do a little compare and contrast.
Cool.
But the Terraformians, as they're called in Earthquack, actually appear. They first appear in 1955 in Uncle Scrooge number 13, in a story called Land Beneath the Ground. And they're called there's two warring factions called the Terries and the Fermies. They're not actually called Terraformians in the original story. So when Webby is reading her diary, and reading the story about the king and everything like that, that is Uncle Scrooge number 13. That's the story. And that's the story that was pretty much closely adapted in the episode Earthquack, which we don't see any of that playing out in this episode. So I'm hoping that in a future episode, when we revisit the Terraformians, because why wouldn't we? They didn't really have any great screen time in this episode, that we get a little bit more of their history and find out a little bit more of, you know, their the war that they're fighting underground, and also the contests that they have that caused the earthquakes in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely don't really get into the details of the Terraformians. So they're kind of just a bit of a MacGuffin, and then we get the reveal at the end. But I love how they had sort of one visual aspect until they walked into the light, and then they looked like the classic Terraformians. In the comics, is that how they looked as well?
Pretty close, a little bit more rounded, and they all wear different style bow ties so that you can tell the Terries and the Fermis apart.
Okay.
So none of them were wearing any sort of neckwear in this episode.
I loved it because so much of the new DuckTales has this very unique, distinct style that's very different from classic Disney. But then the Terraformians, when they come into the sunlight, they look so classic Disney. Yeah. And I thought that was just a really cool touch. It's a nice callback.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's see. Anything else that you want to bring up?
No, I mean, like, there's definitely the mole monsters thing is just sort of like a very general reference to older, like, 1960s style monster movies.
I was looking at those monster movie posters and seeing if any were direct parodies, but I didn't see any that I recognized as direct parodies.
No, I think, like, some of those tropes are just so... they're so overused that you can't really say any one thing, right? Like, there's just so many movies like that from that B-movie era in the 1960s, to the 50s and 60s. So, the aspect of this series where it's kind of anachronistic, where the movie theater felt very 1950s, but then like they have smartphones, but Dewey carries or Huey carries around an actual like physical copy of the Junior Woodchuck's manual. Like I like how they could have very easily made that an app. Right, that would have been like the trendy like update thing to do is like, well, let's just check with the Junior Woodchucks app. But instead, like they maintain that classic aspect because that's important, I think. And like the physical book is such a relic of the classic series that it holds weight for him to carry that around. But then at the same time, like we go back to the Great Dime Chase. Louis is on his phone. It's an important part of the story where he's like, "Oh, the charge is dead. I'll just buy a new one." Right? There are modern aspects, but at the same time, it's also, you know, like some like the vehicles sometimes look like they're a little bit more sort of vintage and that sort of thing. So it's there's just a really cool mix of old and new, and I really like that. It's,
you know, speaking of the Junior Woodchuck guidebook, Louis looks in there and makes a reference to all of the bad guys that we saw in the pilot episode. He has a page dedicated to the Wing of Secrets, and in there, you know, we see the headless man horse, and Pijou the gold seeking dragon. And we also see just kind of, it's half obscured by his hand, but the golden coin from the original DuckTales pilot.
Yeah.
Cause we see the coin in the garage, but they don't make any reference to it.
Yeah.
But he's written it down in his book. So another hint that we're going to go to probably Plain Awful at some point.
Yeah. Cool.
Other than that, there's all of the posters in the subway reference Glom Gold. He has the monopoly on the advertising in the subway stations and subway cars. And there's one moment when the Huey and one of the Terraformians touch fingers, which I'm sure is a reference to E.T.
Yeah, totally. Did you also notice that the Terraformians color-coded to match Huey, Dewey, Louie, Webby, and Lena?
Oh no, I did not. Yeah, notice there that. Were, I noticed that Huey and a red Terraformian were the ones that touched fingers.
Yeah, all of the Terraformians matched all of the kids. And the interesting part of that is that, you know, to match all the kids, there's red, blue, green, pink, and then black, was one of the Terraformians, which was for Laena. And I think that that's like, it's not necessarily foreshadowing because we already know her connection to Magica. But I just thought that was a cool, like sort of blink and you miss it moment of like, oh, you look at them. I was like, huh? Because I think the parallel was meant to be that like they were on the same adventure that our characters were on. It's just like sort of a mirror image.
Oh, right. Because they even say that they're looking for the build.
The monsters for the surface.
Build monsters for the surface. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I thought that was really clever. That was a really cool touch.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, I think it's time for the Junior Woodchuck podcast. Let's check in with our Junior Woodchucks.
Hello, this is the afternoon of DuckTales. We're going to be hearing Terror of the Terraformians. So, do you remember the girl from the last one, Laena? She's in this one too. And she's trying to hide the Magica, the spell, from them, the shadow. Because if she walks into light, the shadow will appear and they're trying to hide it from. And she's trying to hide it from them. And the others are trying to find the Terraformians. And when Huey had the book, a book that could learn about ancient artifacts and anything that comes up new, that like the headless horse, who Huey rated, now has a head. Anyways, we're not talking about that. So there was a train that was in the subway and it was like really crumbling, and Launchpad watched a movie at the theater, which is where they came from. Guess what? Launchpad thought that everyone was a mole man, and it was really weird. And guess what? When it got to a really great part, like when the train crashed, when the energy, like when it was done, he started to think he was a mole man. And it was really weird. Okay, anyways, that's all for today. See you next time at the Junior Woodchuck Podcast. See ya.
Okay, you know what? I'm still waiting for somebody to write a review on iTunes so I can read it out here. A review that has a DuckTales pun in it.
Mm.
So come on, guys. I'm counting on you to write a great review that's just loaded with DuckTales-inspired puns.
I'm gonna call people out because I know that there's at least 30 of you that are consistently listening to every single episode. And so one of you 30 people has to go to iTunes and leave that review with
And I'll read it. Yeah. I'll read it out loud.
Yeah.
So because I love puns.
Yeah, somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to do it.
Okay, so Jared Boyd sent us an email again after the last episode just to correct a mistake that he noticed in his email that he sent us in the last episode about his Darkwing theory. He says, I realize I made a bit of a blunder. I wrote the name Fergus McDuck, Scrooge's father, when I actually meant to write Dingus McDuck, Scrooge's grandfather. Dingus is also known as Dirty Dingus. It even appears in the Easter egg that we pointed out on Webby's conspiracy board. And it is he who married Molly Mallard, whereas Fergus, wife of Scrooge's mother, was Downey O'Drake.
Mm.
So a little bit of family tree history there. Fergus is apparently due to appear in the series, most likely in a flashback, and to be voiced by Graham McTavish. But he is not the one I meant to suggest as a possible founder, a naturally still living leader of Fowl. And then he has some questions to ask us, unrelated to the the conspiracy that he was talking about in the previous email. He says, while I'm here, I thought I'd bounce a few ideas off you guys. I know you had talked about the fact that the new DuckTales very much leaves open opportunities to explore rebooted versions of the other Disney Afternoon properties, such as Tailspin, Goof Troop, and of course Darkwing Duck. Apparently, the creators of DuckTales had expressed interest in having Mickey Mouse appear in DuckTales, but for reasons best known to themselves, Disney axed the idea. Yeah, that was just a, it was a legal issue for some reason.
Hmm.
My questions are, number one, would you like the idea of a Mickey Mouse-centered series as part of this new Disney-shared TV universe, possibly with such characters as Oswald the Lucky Rabbit fleshing out the cast? And number two, would you want to see Daisy reimagined to fit into the new DuckTales continuity, perhaps as part of the rotating cast of support characters? What do you think of that, Mike?
I would love it if in season two they introduce Daisy. Because the way that, that I think about the DuckTales universe, or I mean, it's the way that I think about a lot of the Disney cartoons, is that, and I think this is the way that Disney prefers you to think about the characters, that Mickey and the gang, they're performers, right? So when you go to Disneyland and you see them, like, that's where they live. Like, they live in Toontown. So when you go to Mickey's house, that's Mickey's house. But when you see Mickey in a cartoon, he's actually acting in that cartoon, right? So he's playing a character. Sometimes that character is Mickey Mouse, and it's an on-screen persona that he takes on. But I especially think back to, like, the Prince and the Pauper and the Jack and the Beanstalk era of cartoons. Yeah. They really played up the idea that Mickey and Donald and Goofy, they would step into roles. And that their relationships would always stay similar, but not always exactly the same. And sometimes Mickey and Donald could be adversarial, and sometimes they were best friends, right? So the idea that DuckTales is yet another one of these performances, it's another one of these stories that these actors are playing roles in. Donald is just playing a role here, right? So, having Daisy show up, it's not Daisy in the classic sense of Daisy, but it would be the DuckTales version of Daisy. Like, this is the DuckTales version of Donald, who is an adventurer. So you could do something fun with the character of Daisy. So I would love to see her brought in season two, and flesh out the cast with another great female character, and maybe even have Donald and Daisy go off on an adventure on their own. That would be really, really cool. The other thing that was mentioned was Oswald, and Oswald there's two factors here. First is the Epic Mickey games, which sort of not introduced me to the character of Oswald, but kind of like made me fall in love with the character of Oswald. Really like kind of gave him a story that I don't know, it's for some reason just connected with me. But the fact that Oswald is the original Mickey Mouse, except just the timing was wrong and the legal issues and whatnot, right? So there are those aspects that I connect with Oswald, that he's sort of, he could have been just as big of a star as Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck or any of those other characters, but he's kind of off in the shadows as a result of the circumstances of that character. And maybe one day we'll do an episode dedicated to Oswald and sort of like the
his convoluted history.
Yeah, because Oswald, I love the history of that character. Yeah, and I love the story behind that. It's just so fascinating to hear that Mickey is really the second child, and that the older child kind of is in the shadows, or at least was up until, I think, Epic Mickey, obviously up until that character went into the public domain and Disney could do whatever they wanted with them, right? Kind of got their hands back on that character.
Well, that's not exactly how that went down.
Okay.
But that's a story for another time.
So we can get into all that. But I would love to see a series with Mickey and Oswald in the same sort of, yeah, like in this world. And so I don't know exactly.
In the classic Disney comics, yeah. Mickey Mouse was a detective for quite a while. And he and Goofy would go on just adventures doing detective work and solving mysteries.
Yeah.
And I could easily see Mickey having a TV show where that is the premise.
Yeah.
And I think that would fit really well with Oswald there. Maybe even Oswald could replace Goofy and the two of them could have their own detective agency together. And that would be a great show. The Phantom Plot was always the biggest villain there, and he should be the villain for that the show as well.
Yeah, I mean that would be perfect. That's like the show of my dreams. I would be to get like a film noir, Mickey Mouse Oswald cartoon. That would be so fantastic. That would be great. And especially if it was connected then to DuckTales and eventually Darkwing and whatever else totally. Ends up being connected here.
Yeah, because Mickey Mouse was never really part of the Disney Afternoon. He appeared in the theme song, the Disney yep. Afternoon theme song, but that was it as far as Mickey was concerned.
Yeah, and then the only other connection to Disney Afternoon I think he has is the very loose connection through a Goofy movie. When yeah. Max references Mickey Mouse, and then Mickey yeah. and Donald are in the one
they're hitchhiking or something. Yeah, yeah.
Hitchhiking.
I think that as far as Daisy is concerned, we have Della Duck coming into the picture,
mm-hmm.
and I think that Della Duck and having Della and Daisy would be too, I guess. I don't know if I want to say too similar of a character, but I think that yep. Della fits the bill. Get it, Bill? For if we wanted to put Daisy in there, I don't know if she's necessary.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to wait and see if Della does show up at some point, which I think she will, and if she sticks around. What's our lucky dime rating on this episode? What's this one worth?
You know, I really like this episode. I think I'm going to give it a 4.5. You know, I think I would have loved to see the Terraformians have a little bit more purpose in mm-hmm. the episode. But otherwise, it was just, like I said, the animation was great. It was really funny with Launchpad. It was a great adventure. Got to know all the characters a little bit better. So
yeah.
It's pretty near to be perfect for me. So 4.5.
So I'm going to give this episode 4 dimes for the episode, but 5 dimes for Launchpad. That's
okay.
That's my rating on this one. It's a little confusing, but Launchpad, all the moments with Launchpad, 50 cents. Like that's okay. it's a half dollar for sure.
Okay, in the last episode, I suggested yep. that we have an ongoing poll on Twitter to find out what the four best episodes of the season are going to be.
Okay.
So let's see. I said, what is your favorite DuckTales episode out of the first 4 episodes? And I said, you know, Woohoo, Day Trip of Doom, Great Dime Chase, and Beagle Birthday Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And so the results are at the bottom with 0% of the votes is Day Trip of Doom.
Okay.
11% said Beagle Birthday Massacre. 33% said Woohoo, and 56% went to the Great Dime Chase as the favorite episode.
Interesting.
Yeah. So this round 2, Day Trip of Doom is out of the running because it got no votes. It got last place. So we're going to replace that with Terror of the Terraformians. Mm-hmm. And it's the Twitter poll is currently live. And so get to Twitter and get voting. And then Saturday, once the new episode hits on Saturday, I'll put up a new Twitter poll with the new episode in there.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Cool. Well, it's going to be really interesting at the end of the season to see what our top 4 are. Who made it all the way to the end? Cool. Awesome. Cool. Well, our next episode, speaking of, is going to be The House of the Lucky Gander. Here's the description. Donald competes with his cousin Gladstone Gander to impress Louie at a mysterious resort in Macaw, while Scrooge tries to lure the kids away from the resort's endless distractions. So, Scrooge is going to be back. Gladstone Gander is coming. We actually have a clip over on our Facebook page that you can check out. Voiced by Paul F. Tompkins. Very exciting.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to this episode. I'm really looking forward to a Donald-centric story. I think that's going to be fun. Donald being,
I think so too,
one of my favorite Disney characters. So cool. I guess that's it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.
See you next afternoon.
Don't forget, you can stay up to date with all the latest DuckTales news by heading to cartoonafternoon.com, where you'll find everything DuckTales and Disney cartoon related for the shows that we cover. You can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ToonAfternoon, as well as on Twitter at ToonAfternoon. And if you want to send us an email, you can do that by sending us an email at ToonAfternoon@gmail.com.
You can also find us on Twitter. You can find me at Curtis Findlay, KurtisFindlay.
And I'm on Twitter at ArkWulf, ArkWulf. And don't forget that we are a part of the Thunderquack Podcast Network. Head to thunderquack.com to check out all the other great podcasts in our network. And if you want to support us, you can do that two ways. First, by heading to store.thunderquack.com to pick up some merch. Or you can head to patreon.com/thunderquack. And pledge your support over there. It's a monthly pledge. As low as $1 a month gets you access to the exclusive Thunderquack podcast, as well as the Thunderquack Patreon Facebook group. So that's patreon.com/thunderquack. And thank you to everybody who does support us over there.
Disney Dad's Cartoon Afternoon is not associated with the Disney Company in any way. All characters, titles, music, and everything is all copyright of their respective owners. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Disney Dad's Cartoon Afternoon.